along. Happy Thursday, everyone. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studio. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. Veterans Day is coming up soon, so today we're going to give you some inspiration. Our guests include a World War II Medal of Honor recipient, a combat photographer who's been awarded the National Press Photographers Association Military Photographer of the Year Award, and joining me in studio as a wingman today, an intriguing cat who did two tours of duty in Vietnam, but was never in the military. John Essinger, good to have you sitting in with me.
Thank you, Ben. It's always a pleasure.
Well, I tell you what, if you'd like to interact with our guests, give us a call on the Buckmaster Show live line, 790-2040, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get right into it. Our first guest is the sole surviving Marine from World War II to wear the Medal of Honor, our nation's highest military award for acts of valor in combat. On the 23rd of February, during the Battle for Iwo Jima, Corporal Hershey Woody Williams, a flamethrower operator, daringly went forward alone, covered by only four riflemen, to eliminate machine gun fire from Japanese positions. He fought valiantly for 4 hours under enemy fire, often returning to his own lines to prepare demolition charges and obtain service flamethrowers. He is credited with neutralizing one of the most fanatically defended Japanese strong points encountered by his regiment. On October 5th, 1945, Woody was presented the Medal of Honor by President Truman at the White House. Woody, welcome to the Buckmaster Show, and good to talk to you again.
Well, good to hear from you, Ben. Thank you.
Woody, it's been 75 years since those terrible days on Iwo Jima. You're 97 years young. What keeps a fellow like you going?
Well, other people keep me going. They keep calling on me just like you do. So I can't hide. I have to be in the public.
Well, Woody, when I was thinking about, you know, Bill asked me to do a show to sort of prepare people for Veterans Day, and I couldn't think of anyone better than you. A, you've got quite the story. B, you're a good storyteller. And C, you're still engaged. You're still doing things for veterans out there. Let's just share a little bit about the action for which you received the Medal of Honor, Woody. Now, as I understand it, when you landed on the beach there in Iwo Jima, there were six other team members, flamethrower/demolition folks in your team. But by the time that fateful February 23rd came along, you were the only one left.
Yeah, in my company. And, of course, each company, we had three companies in a regiment, A, B, and C. And then the next regiment had C, D, and F, I mean F, G, and H, and so forth. So in each company had this special weapons unit that we started really, or it came about, when we were still on Guadalcanal. Now, Guadalcanal had been already secured because Guadalcanal was taken in 1942. We didn't get there until late 1943, in fact, December. So in January of 44, we got these flamethrowers none of us had ever seen before, didn't know what they were or how to use them, but they shipped them to every company, and they formed this special unit to begin training us how to use a flamethrower and be a demolition person. And this little unit of six Marines plus myself and a gunnery sergeant, that was the outfit.
Now, Woody, it's a heck of a job to learn on-the-job training, but on that day, Woody, this, you know, when I talk to veterans like yourselves, and I often hear, you know, if I had to think about it again, maybe I wouldn't have done it, but that's not your, I mean, you had orders, and it was your job to do, so you went out and did it.
Yeah, that was my job, and I was only doing that for which other Marines had trained me to do. So it was just part of being a Marine and doing the mission that we were charged to do.
Woody, I know I sort of paraphrased the actual Medal of Honor citation there, but I know that you really take issue with that language if you were allowed to edit it, and particularly the phrase that you did it alone. Clearly what you did was heroic. I don't think there's any doubt in my mind or anyone else's mind about that. But there were at least two Marine riflemen who were killed protecting you so that you could do your job. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. I had four Marines that the commanding officer had told me to select four individuals that would go with me, or at least protect me when I would be approaching a pillbox. One of the disadvantages we had as Marines moving forward and trying to overcome the enemy, on a pillbox, they are reinforced concrete, and they have an opening usually in the back of the pillbox where the enemy could go in and out. But the only target we had was an aperture, or at least that's what we called it, in the front of the pillbox. It was about 8 inches high and went across the front of the pillbox where the enemy inside the pillbox could stick machine guns out and rifles out, and they had a complete field of fire. All we had was that aperture to shoot at to try to kill the enemy that was within the pillbox. So flamethrowers were the principal weapon of getting to the or eliminating the enemy within those pillboxes, because you could drop bombs on them or you could hit them with a bazooka, but it didn't do anything because they were reinforced concrete steel or reinforced concrete with steel inside of them. We call it today rebars, but back in those days we just called it metal. But they had all the advantage, and consequently we were losing as we would try to advance forward that we were charged to do. You can't take an island unless you can keep moving forward. And as we would move forward, we would, of course, lose a lot of Marines because we would jump up and run to a position, hit the deck, and when you raise up and run, well, you become a very good target.
Well, and what about, Woody, when you raise up and run with a tank of petrol on your back, and I'm guessing the range of any machine gun is much further than the range of a flamethrower. You had to get reasonably close, didn't you, to be effective?
Yeah, within no more than 25 yards, usually 15 to 20 yards. And the flamethrower weighed 70 pounds. We had 4.5 gallons of flammable fuel in it. We used high-octane gasoline and diesel fuel mixture. The diesel fuel gave it a body, and, of course, the high-octane gasoline gave it the power of burning.
Now, Woody, I got to interrupt, sir. I've seen your photo of you, both with you holding a flamethrower and then the Medal of Honor presentation ceremony. Flamethrower weighed 70 pounds. You didn't weigh much more than that at the time, Woody.
Well, right? I weighed 150, so I was
okay.
Twice the weight.
Woody, we're just sort of, as I mentioned in the intro, we're trying to prepare people for Veterans Day. Again, in your case, 75 years ago on Iwo Jima. Do you, as a veteran who has been awarded the Medal of Honor, do you feel an extra responsibility, Woody, to continue to chug along and to educate people and to make sure folks really know the importance of that day?
Absolutely. I think we have lost a lot of the impetus on Veterans Day. I think primarily because as we grew up in my era of time, we were absolutely taught to love our country, to love our flag, to be patriotic. We have sort of lost that along the way somewhere. So the impetus today on Veterans Day is nothing like it was years ago, when people would just turn out in groves and parades would be exceedingly long because people had such an admiration for those who had served and protected us and sacrificed their lives. And somewhere along the way, we've lost that to some degree. We still have it, and I've spent my whole life trying to maintain that same attitude that our country is one of the most important things that we have in our lives, and we wouldn't be an American without those who had sacrificed to make it possible for us to say we are an American and have the freedoms that we have. So I continue to promote it and participate in it. I don't know, it's a Veterans Day that I've never participated in, still do, and will continue as long as I'm able to.
Woody, why don't you hold that thought? We're going to hold you over the commercial break, if you don't mind. Folks, if you would like to talk to a real-life Medal of Honor recipient, give us a call, 790-2040. This is Ben Bueller Garcia and John Essinger sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. Hey, have you had an authentic Danish Kringle? Visit Mona's Danish Bakery on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise and check it off your bucket list. Mona's is open for breakfast, luncheon, indoor and patio dining, plus online orders and pickup are also available. Mona's is open Monday to Saturday, 6:30 a.m. to 5 p.m., Sundays 7 to 2. See you at Mona's northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you're over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is in the process of developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan and soon will consider which projects best address transportation needs across the greater Tucson region. As part of its ongoing public outreach, the RTA invites your early input on which projects meet regional goals. Learn more about plan development and provide input at rtanext.com. Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill, coming to you from the Green Thing Socolo Village studio. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Live Line. That number is 520-790-2040. We're talking with a World War II Medal of Honor recipient, Herschel Woody Williams, the last, correct me if I'm wrong, Woody, but you are literally the last surviving Marine Medal of Honor recipient from that war, correct?
That is correct. There's just two World War Medal of Honor recipients still living. Charles Coolidge, who was an Army guy and served in Europe. So he's a year older than I am. In fact, he's 2 years older than I am. He's 99. And he and I are the only two World War II recipients still in your presence.
Well, Woody, good, clean living. I'm all for that. Go ahead.
Woody, this is John Esslinger. And first, thank you for your service. I got to tell you, I just finished reading a book that my Uncle Riley wrote about that very same action, and he was there. And when I was growing up, I had no idea until after he passed away. And my cousin sent me a copy of that book that she found, and it's gotten me a movie. And thank you.
All right, thank you.
What do you, you know? One thing that is interesting to me, you know, I've heard many veterans say that when I took the oath, I took the oath for life, not just the time that I spend in the uniform. And I mean, you are a living example of that. Tell us a little bit about your Medal of Honor Foundation and what you continue to do in our communities and our nation to remind people of the importance of service.
Okay. Yeah. Back in 2013, we dedicated the very first Gold Star Family Memorial Monument in the United States here in our little state of West Virginia. Because our families, our loved ones, have never been recognized for the sacrifice that they made when they lost one of their own in the armed forces of our country. And, of course, we walk in their footsteps all the way back. Individuals sacrificed their lives serving in the armed forces and to maintain our freedom and our way of life. Had never been recognized in any way. Gold Star mothers were somewhat recognized in some areas of our country, but the rest of the family, Gold Star dad and grandma and grandpa and sisters and brothers and aunts and uncles and all those, nobody ever mentioned the fact that they had lost a loved one serving in our country. So we decided in West Virginia, along with some great other people, that we ought to have something to pay tribute to the 11,477 veterans, individuals, that we have on our Veterans Memorial on our Capitol grounds. The families of those individuals, nobody ever mentioned them. Nobody ever did anything, or no tribute was ever made. So I decided that we need to do that, and we did it. I think maybe selfishly for our own people, but then once we got it on and it got on the internet and it began to be seen by other people, the first individual that made contact with us after it got on the internet was the son of a father who had lost his life in Vietnam. And he was in Valley Forge, Pennsylvania. And he contacted us and he said, "We want to put one of those up here on the Medal of Honor Grove. They have a grove up there with all the names of the Medal of Honor recipients, and we want to put one of those here." So he was the second one who did it, and from there it continued to grow. And today we have 79 throughout the United States in 49 states.
Okay, who's not stepping up, Woody? Who's missing? Which state?
Montana, but we've got them right on the edge. We had one of our employees of the foundation out there day before yesterday, and he was meeting with a group of people at Beaumont, and okay. I'm convinced they're going to come aboard, and then we'll have all 50 states, and we've got about 70 other communities throughout the country that are in some form of process. And in fact, this Saturday, I'm traveling in West Virginia. I'm traveling about 180 miles to dedicate a Gold Star Family Memorial Monument in a very small community. But that will make number 9 in our little state of West Virginia.
Wow. Well done. Well, I tell you, Woody, when I was looking for someone to inspire our listeners here on the Buckmaster Show as we're headed into Veterans Day, you've done the job. You charged those pillboxes with a flamethrower, and now you're charging the states getting these memorials set up in a nice way.
I feel obligated to do that because the only reason I have the Medal of Honor is because of others. Because I could have done anything in the world, but if my commanding officer and my fellow Marines had not been willing to testify and give a testament as to what took place that day, I would have never received the Medal of Honor. If those two individuals who sacrificed their life that day protecting me, if they had not been willing to participate in that endeavor, it's very possible that I would never have received the Medal of Honor. So I wear it in their honor, not mine. They gave more than I did.
Well, sir, I am eternally grateful for what you've done and especially what you continue to do educating the next generations. Thanks for spending a few minutes with us here today, Woody.
Thank you for the opportunity. I am very grateful for it. Thank
All right.
you.
Take care, sir. Folks, if you'd like to learn more, look up the Herschel Woody Williams Medal of Honor Foundation. The address is hwwmohf.org. Our next guest on today's show comes from a long line of veterans. Members of her family have served our nation going all the way back to the Revolutionary War. Stacy Pearsall was an Air Force combat photographer excelling in a field at a time that was a principally male-dominated profession. Stacy, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for having me.
Well, always a pleasure. Stacy, I wanted to have you on for two reasons. One is to emphasize the role that women veterans have played in our military, and I should say the increased role that women veterans have played or are playing in our military, and then the special mission you've pursued to honor veterans after that. So let's talk a little bit about Stacy's situation here. You, as I mentioned, principally a male-dominated career field. You're actually going into combat with a camera and a sidearm, and that's about it.
Well, you know, my job as a combat photographer was to deploy and tell the military story, whether that was in the field of battle or doing humanitarian relief assignments. Oftentimes, as a combat photographer, combat is the first priority. And I did deploy to document various Army, Marines, and sometimes Navy and Air Force units doing their jobs downrange. And often people, you know, would ask, how does that happen, considering I served during a time when women weren't officially allowed in combat roles. And, you know, there was always these loopholes, my unit being one of them, where women were attached in support of infantry units instead of assigned. So that's how that happened.
It seems like we're kind of mincing words, aren't we, Stacy? I mean, if people are at you, you're in combat.
Yes, I was. I served right alongside infantry units, and when they slept, I slept. I pulled duty, and I did my job. But I will say, as a combat photographer, my job was to document them bringing the fight to the enemy. And, you know, I can count on both my hands the number of times I actually had to unholster my pistol.
And I tell you, one of the more touching conversations you and I had, Stacy, I recall you told me that you, after a while, you stopped carrying the M4, the carbine, because if it ever came to a point where you needed a rifle, there'd be plenty of them laying around. And that, in one that statement just really gives folks an idea of what you and your comrades go through. Stacy, we've got about 3 minutes before we have to take the next break, but I want you to tell a story because it also is a very powerful example of what female veterans, and particularly female combat veterans, go through. You were blown up, but not one, but by two IEDs during your time in service. Eventually, you were forced into medical retirement. But that started you on another path. And tell us the story about getting your hand slapped by the Red Cross volunteer at the hospital, because go ahead. Tell the story, Stacy.
Well, when you close your eyes and somebody says, picture the word veteran, and my face is not what's conjured in your mind's eye. So when I went to the VA, oftentimes people looked at me as a VA employee or the spouse or a child of the veteran. And I was there at the VA getting my health care, and I'd been waiting 2 hours past my appointment time, feeling awfully hungry and aggravated like every other veteran. And the Red Cross, bless their hearts, were there with their cookies, passing out sodas. And I went up to get a soda and a cookie from the gal there, and she slapped my hand away and said, those are for veterans. And that was, you know, how we are exposed to military veterans through television, entertainment, and media oftentimes depicts male. And, you know, I think that is really where the Veterans Portrait Project, along with a couple of other inspirations, launched itself. in an effort to change how we view veterans.
Yeah, literally, in your case, because you are a very talented photographer, and you, Stacy, you practiced your craft in, what, over 40 countries before, I mean, while you were still in the military, correct? Or am I getting my numbers mixed up?
No, that's correct. I traveled 280 days a year while I was at Combat Camera, and it took me all over the world. I was really lucky to be able to traverse the globe and to document some of America's finest men and women in service.
Well, and Stacy, again, that's precisely why I wanted to bring you on, because not only have you got a great story to tell about that helps people recognize women veterans, and in your case, women combat veterans, but that also leads us to the next chapter of your life, and I want to chat more about that when we come back after this commercial break, Stacy. Ladies and gentlemen, Stacy's time at the VA did not end with her getting her wrist slapped trying to steal a cookie from the Red Cross volunteer there. But it also was an opportunity for her to meet a World War II veteran. And that started her on a very, very beautiful and passionate endeavor, the Veterans Picture Project. Stick around. You'll hear more about that when we come back. If you'd like to join in, give us a call, 520-790-2040. This is BBG sitting in for Bill Buckmaster, joined by John Essinger. Stick around.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill from the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Hey, the weather, you heard the ad. The weather is finally turning cooler. It's the perfect time to do your fall planting. Since 1970, Green Things has been the go-to place for your gardening needs. Green Things sits on a lovely 13-acre site that's also home to Socorro Village and all of their fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things on River Road, just west of Brandy Fenton Park, and on the web at greenthingsaz.com, and also check out zocalovillage.com. Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to join the conversation today, give us a call on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Live Line, 790-2040. Let's get back to Stacy Pearsall. Stacy, I apologize. I got the name of your project wrong right off the bat. I'm expecting someone to fire me any second now. It's the Veterans Portrait Project. Sounds much better than the Veterans Picture Project.
It's okay.
And no just to acquaint people, folks, people that are just tuning in, Stacy, you are a female combat veteran, combat photographer. I'm guessing, Stacy, if it was up to you, you'd still be serving in uniform if you could?
I absolutely would. I think though, if I'm being honest, I have had enough time now to better understand the path I was always meant to go. And my military service was simply a breeding ground or a preparatory step to doing what I do now and to have the tools that I need to do it efficiently and thoughtfully.
Stacy, let's talk about what you are doing now, because I find it very inspirational, in particular because, I mean, you truly, if folks visit your website, you are an artist. You're very accomplished. We kind of joke now about getting your wrist slapped at the cookie table, but it was another VA visitor, maybe that same one, I don't know, that inspired you to undertake your current labor of love. Tell us about Mickey Dorsey and how that got you started on this path that you're on now.
I was in a very dark place after the service decided they could no longer use me. And I was struggling to heal physically. I was dealing with a lot of emotional traumas that I had carried with me from my time in combat, and feeling very marginalized at the VA, as that Red Cross encounter is a great example why I was feeling that way. I was contemplating suicide at the time, and I felt like I had no future. If I couldn't serve in uniform, I couldn't serve my country, then what identity did I have? That was the big question. And if I didn't fit in the veteran community, then where did I belong? I remember at the VA, I was waiting to see my neurologist, feeling extra isolated, extra down and frustrated, when an elderly gentleman came and sat next to me. And I could feel him staring at me, and the anger began to just bubble up inside. I was so tired of being stared at. And I wanted to turn and just unleash, you know, months and years of pain and aggression on him, when the softer part of me broke through and I turned to him and I asked if there was something that I could do for him. And his eyes lit up, and that was just the opportunity he had been waiting for, to be able to share with me his story about surviving D-Day, liberating a concentration camp. And I felt utterly humiliated in that moment, because I had no idea who this gentleman was. And all this time I was thinking that everyone was prejudiced against me, when I had become the prejudiced one in turn. And I realize now, looking back, that Mickey saw that I was in pain and recognized his own experiences in me. And he saved me that day. In order to better educate myself about the veteran community and to educate others, I asked the VA's permission to bring my studio to the VA hospital and start taking portraits. What was earth-shattering for me was I was told by the doctors during my rehabilitation that I would not be able to do photography anymore, because they said I wouldn't be able to stand for prolonged periods of time or lift heavy weights and things like that. So photography was off the table. One of the big reasons why the military retired me in the first place. Hmm. Now, suddenly the camera was back in my hands. I wasn't thinking about who I was or wasn't in their eyes, but relating to my fellow veterans. And with every veteran that I photographed, it was a validation for the feelings that I had, and me validating them, giving them the... Sorry, go ahead.
Well, as I say, Stacy, it struck me that when we talked to Medal of Honor recipient Woody Williams in the previous segment, we talked about his, you know, he took an oath to a lifetime of service. And what you're doing now with the Veterans Portrait Project, that it strikes me that's an extension of your service, and also cathartic.
Yes, absolutely. It's it made me realize that service doesn't always have to be in uniform. And again, the military combat experience for me was simply a preamble to move to this next step and to be able to touch the lives of my veteran community, my fellow veteran community. And it saved my life. I was no longer thinking about ending my life, but continuing on the next day so that I could touch other veterans' lives and hopefully do some good in the process.
Stacy, if folks can learn more, visit, and I encourage you, ladies and gentlemen, visit veteransportraitproject.com and just see the amazing work of art, but also messages that, Stacy is now translating with these veterans. How many photos, ballpark, Stacy, since you started doing this? How many portraits?
I have photographed over 8,500 veterans in all 50 states.
Wow. You know, maybe you and Woody need to get together and go to Montana, and maybe together you can get his project done up there. Stacy,
I've been in Montana, and I was thinking about him, like I should call my friends.
Well, there you go. Stacy, we've got another guest. We're running out of time, but on this Veterans Day, what would you say to the civilians out there about thanking a veteran? I mean, that's not enough, but what do they really... Do we civilians need to get engaged? Do we need more skin in the game?
You know, a lot of people ask, what can I do? And the thing is, look at yourself, and everyone has something to give and something we can give back to our communities. In doing so, giving that gift that you have, minus photography, ask yourself, what is yours? And see how you can incorporate that, whether it's into the veteran community or your community and surroundings.
Stacy, thank you so much for joining us today and literally inspiring. Boy, two guests so far hit it out of the park. I think I'm going to be okay here.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you again, Stacy. Folks, visit veteransportraitproject.com. Coming up, and well, actually starting right now, we're going to transition a little bit. An intriguing cat. I'd be fortunate enough to have him joining me here in studio. Now, ladies and gentlemen, he did two tours of duty in Vietnam, but he was never in the military. We're going to find out just how that works. John Essinger, welcome back to the microphone.
Thank you, Ben. And it's an honor to be able to tell this story.
Well, let's do that, because as I understand it, you tried to volunteer and they wouldn't have you, so you went anyway.
Well, the way it happened is I grew up after World War II, during Korea, and when I was just a little kid, we lived across the street from a CPT base where they trained World War II pilots, and all these pilots lived in this little town, and they were back from the war, and they all had airplanes because their fathers were really wealthy farmers. And I used to go over there when I was 5 years old, and man, they had PT-22s and all kinds of airplanes, and I wanted to fly. Well, their response to me was, get out of here, kid. And yeah. So 15 years later, I got my first airplane ride, which was my very first flying lesson. And going forward, and this was prior to Vietnam, And then Vietnam started happening. I went to work for Beach Aircraft Corporation in Wichita, Kansas, when I was 20 years old. And by then, I had my commercial pilot's license, and I just wanted to get in the military, and I wanted to go fly fighters. And it just didn't happen. And one day, I got a phone call from this guy out of the clear blue. And he goes, hey, you understand, since you work at Beach, you have knowledge of Operation Laughing Eagle. Well, I was working on a project for the we built six airplanes for the military, and they were secret spy planes. So consequently, I had a clearance. I already had all the background to keep these things going.
And John, hold that thought, because I want to come back. This is a great story. That Laughing Eagle?
Laughing Eagle, Operation Boy, Laughing Eagle.
Somebody had a sense of humor when they're naming that. When we come back, I want you to tell more of your story, and we'll get to the bottom of, because I think you're a veteran, but you never wore the uniform. So you're a veteran, but you're kind of not. but you are.
I am, and I want to be, and I always will be in my mind.
There you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. If you'd like to give us a ring, give us a call, 790-2040. We'll be back with more from John Nessinger after these messages.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. In preparation for developing a new 20-year regional transportation plan, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for the draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, ladies and gentlemen. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill here in the Green Things Socolo Village studio. This portion of the Buckmaster Show is presented by Silver City and Grant County. Start your planning now for a visit to Silver City so you're ready when New Mexico is once again open to out-of-state visitors. Only a three-hour drive east of Tucson, there's a whole lot to see and do in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. You can hike in the Gila National Wilderness, and I personally recommend a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument. For a complete listing of the many things to do and great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. If you'd like to join us in the conversation, give us a call, 790-2040. That is the Rincon Ventures Property Management Bill Buckmaster live line. We're talking with John Essinger, who I wanted, you know, we're talking Veterans Day. We're just giving folks a preview, John, and I really wanted to have you on because, and I use the word complimentarily, you're an intriguing cat. And, I mean, the very first time I met you was at an air show, and you were introduced as a guy who did two tours of duty in Vietnam but was never in the military, and then they're just sort of like wink, wink, figure it out for yourself, BBG. So when I interrupted you, you were telling the story of a guy in a black suit, probably named Smith, who approached you about an adventure, huh?
Yes, I had, early on, I wanted to be in the military, and I flunked the physical. And then I wound up at Beach Aircraft, and I wound up involved with a special project called Laughing Eagle. And Laughing Eagle was five spy planes that were outfitted with some really interesting stuff. Well, since I was a crew chief on that thing, and I had a lot of knowledge about it, made me kind of different. And then they had a layoff at Beach, and I was just kind of walking around with looking at the ceiling, and the phone rings, and this guy calls me up and says, I heard you have some knowledge of Laughing Eagle. And I told him, man, I don't know what you're talking about. He said, well, that's the right answer. See me tomorrow for lunch. And I met him for lunch. He went over a contract, told me all the stuff, and then he told me how much it paid. And 3 days later, I was on my way to Saigon.
So, I mean, literally that, you're a guy who wanted to join. They didn't want you, as I mentioned, and yeah. Now you're on your way to Saigon. When we talk about, because military, private sector military contractors have gotten more visibility in the current wars and conflicts, but back in Vietnam, was this very common?
No, it was not common at all. As a matter of fact, I've been approached by a channel, a history channel in L.A., and they know of some of my experience. And I took 635-millimeter slides, and I got probably 20 hours of audio tapes flying on missions and us under attack. And they called up and said, hey, we want to talk about this.
The History Channel.
The Military Channel.
Oh, the Military Channel.
Well,
wow.
It's part
Very
of the
cool.
History. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I it's like, well, okay. So we've had extensive conversations, and this just happened recently. So I said, well, let me go through my stuff and see what I have. And so I went ratting around my closet. I found 635-millimeter slides I took over my two contracts and all those audio tapes. And what a trip back to the past. And when I came home in 1972, when I stepped off the airplane, I just turned it off. Very few people knew what I did in Vietnam. Matter of fact, there was probably only four. A lot of people knew I was gone. And, of course, during that time, there was a lot of my buddies and high school friends had been drafted. And, of course, I didn't. So they didn't think anything about what Esslinger was doing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden this pops up. So it's opened up a whole new aspect of my life.
John, congratulations, first off, on the Military Channel thing. That's huge. You heard it first here on the Buckmaster Show, folks. I tell you, we're always, breaking news here. But let's, and I don't know if we can resolve this, but, I read stories, John, and folks say, look, you were there. You were eating the same food. You're using the same trench in the ground. You're getting shot at by the same bullets. You're bleeding the same blood. In my mind, that makes you a veteran. Whether you wore the uniform or you're eligible for benefits or not.
Well, that's the way a lot of us felt.
Okay.
But the thing that made the difference, and it kind of showed up in our conversations with the military guys. They're over there making $126 a month, and they couldn't just cancel our contract and get on a plane and go home.
Right.
We were making big bucks for that time period. And if it got to be more than we wanted to deal with, you'd walk in and tell the boss, hey, I'm signing out. And the next day, if everything worked all right, you'd be on your way back to the States. So that kind of made it where it was acceptable. And so I hold no grudge. And when I look at it now, it's like, I can't believe I did that. and especially now that I'm going through this process, I didn't realize when I was there, under some circumstances, how scared I was. And the other thing that made me a little bit weird, and I still do it, is, if somebody needs a volunteer, I'm there. And so... My boss came up to me and he says, hey, we need you in a special place. And he said, go over to the hooch, get 2 days worth of clothes. And you see that helicopter sitting out there? I said, yes. He said, they're waiting on you. I went and got I put some stuff in a paper sack, one change of clothes, walked out, got in the back of that helicopter. And as soon as I buckled in, the guy goes, welcome aboard, Mr. Esslinger. And I thought I was being in a 1960s movie. And I said, where are we going? He said, I can't tell you.
Wow.
And he said, I'll tell you after we take off. We took off, flew out over the South China Sea about 3 miles, headed back west. And then when we headed back west, I knew I was in trouble.
Wow. Okay. So that, and this is something folks can learn more about this. Hopefully, let us know when you hit the military channel.
Oh, trust me, I will.
John, thanks for your time today. You're still a veteran in my book. Ladies and gentlemen, what a pleasure to host here on the Buckmaster Show. Hopefully we inspired you. World War II veteran, Vietnam veteran, Iraqi war veteran. Make sure you come back, find this show and others at buckmastershow.com. Take care.